It's member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, and all things considered, we're in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio. It's one of my favorite parts of the station to ever come in. Even if there's nobody else in here, I like to just come in here by myself sometimes in the dark. It's a beautiful room. It has this nice sound to it. I'm Dave Lawrence, and very special guest joining us today. New record is Live Book. It's only been out a short amount of time, and that's an artist who I'm really excited to have back on the program. You did a phoner the last time you were on, so we didn't actually get to meet. He's at the Blue Note Hawaii through Sunday, and it's guitarist Andy McKee. Aloha.
Hey, aloha. Thanks for having me, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for taking us up on this opportunity. It's really a very special opportunity to have you here. He's a hardcore Michael Hedges fan, and he's kind of keeping that alive with his technique and his style. We're going to hear about that. But you're known for, you know, a lot of people listen to Afternoon Drive, All Things Considered. You've heard that before.
Oh, sure, yeah.
You know that program.
Absolutely, yeah.
Probably played on one at some point.
Actually, I think this might be my first one.
Well,
yeah, so
we'll go gentle on you. Fingerstyle guitar technique. We've been lucky, Jason Engineer, and I've been watching him kind of messing around here in the room. But for folks listening, thinking about your style, which is an unusual style. I already mentioned one of the guitar players who really had a lot to do with you and influencing you. Talk a little bit about what makes your finger style guitar playing technique a little bit unusual or different.
Well, I guess the term fingerstyle guitar is pretty broad. You know, it just generally means playing without a pick.
Sure.
But where I kind of fit in under there is, you know, I'll pluck strings with my right hand fingers, but I'll also do tapping on the guitar neck and slap harmonics, you know, and percussion on the guitar body. That's the great thing about the acoustic guitar is it's essentially a big drum as well, you know.
Right.
So, those are some of the other techniques that I like to incorporate into it.
And what drove you to pick it up in the beginning? I know metal was a big thing at some point in your life, possibly even in the beginning. That's how I kind of got started with music. What was your original impetus to get this thing into your hand?
Well, I guess the first guy that made me want to play guitar is a guitarist named Eric Johnson, who does a lot of instrumental electric guitar.
Right.
But I had been listening to rock music and heavy metal, you know, and hard rock and all kinds of stuff before that. But he was the guy that made me think, okay, I actually want to try guitar.
Cliffs of Dover had already been out, or was that was it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Cliffs of Dover. And, you know, what drew me to it, I think, was just hearing somebody express themselves with the guitar so clearly, I think. You know, he has a great melodic sense. And so, you know, hearing this instrumental music where it really felt like he was communicating something, you know, just with the guitar,
right,
blew me away. And so, you know, I was drawn to the guitar and, I guess, instrumental music at the same time, really. And so he was the guy that got me into it. And I played electric guitar for a few years, but when I was 16, I kind of made the switch to the acoustic after discovering the possibilities on that, you know, and players like Michael Hedges and Preston Reed and Don Ross, where they were, you know, using different guitar tunings and different techniques all over the guitar to create a full piece of music, you know, with just one guitar.
So. And so you switched to the acoustic. Was it because of Michael that got you onto the acoustic?
I would say initially it was actually Preston Reed. Okay. When I was 16. I saw him do a guitar workshop kind of thing. And, you know, I was just mesmerized with what he was doing. And, you know, I started to try to emulate that a little bit and try to get in the acoustic guitar. And I discovered Michael Hedges, I guess, about a year later. And he became really the guy that changed the direction of my life. It was like, okay, I'm definitely doing the acoustic guitar. And, you know, his music resonated with me like nothing I'd heard before. So.
Boy, it really feels like we're in the future talking about him, and he's been gone almost. It'll be 20 years next year.
That's right. Yeah.
That we lost him. So it's wild. It's very like Jetson-y kind of moment to think of, like, we're talking about him in this context. Well, you make some great original music. You made a lot of people happy with your music because you've kind of, you're a very organic success, and that's sometimes the best. Maybe that's why you're such a nice guy and easy to talk to and stuff. Pick a song from your own catalog that you'd like to play for us in this room. What do you think of the room? Is this a nice little setup?
Oh, yeah,
this
is great, man.
Love
the
nice sound. Yeah,
you know, the wood helps with the reverb and everything. Nice natural tone in here.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's got a great sound. I knew you would sound cool in this room. And what do you think you'd like to...
Well, I guess I'll probably do a tune of mine called Drifting, maybe for any of the listeners who have no idea who I am. This is a tune that really sort of launched my career in a big way when I uploaded videos onto the web, the internet, you know, with YouTube. And so, you know, I played the guitar sort of an unusual way with this tune, and people were kind of curious about that, I think.
Well, that's a great way for people to discover you. That adds to the organic element. There's been so many talented cats who have, and connections to bands, way Neil Sean found Arnel Pineda for Journey,
right,
and
yeah.
Guy from Yes who replaced John Anderson. A lot of different cats have made it through that forum. It's a good library of resources, too. I love going there and listening to interviews or watching shows or whatever it is. So, all right, well, we'll hear it here. And it's Andy McKee and inside our Atherton Performing Arts Studio, All Things Considered. Sounds so good. Andy McKee, Atherton Performing Arts Studio, All Things Considered, HPR. And man, that really does, it is so reminiscent of how you, I can see how you were so influenced by Michael Hedges. I mean, there is a, when you think about guitar players and stuff, not a lot of other cats did that sort of, like using it like you described it so well. It's a nice drum.
Yeah, that's right, man. Yeah, he was, you know, it's a shame that more people don't know about him. I mean, he was every bit the revolutionary guitarist that say Jimi Hendrix, in my opinion. I mean, he changed the whole world of steel string acoustic guitar, you know, back in the early 80s. And he just, I don't know, not enough people found out about him, I think, before he passed, you know, so.
It was a short, and it's funny you mentioned Hendrix. So he had a longer run than Jimmy, but still similarly compressed and short. Because what you just point out, he didn't really have that long of a run. Watching My Life Go By, was that 84, 85? It was one of those 2 years.
Yeah, I think it was 85. Yeah.
85. Mm-hmm. What was your first record that you were exposed to him with?
Oh, I guess it would have been actually Taproot was the first one that I had. I discovered him, unfortunately, the year that he passed away, just a few months before he passed away. And I was going through some old Guitar Player magazines and found him. And so, who's this guy, you know, with crazy long hair and a harp guitar? He had that on the cover of the magazine. So started to read about him, you know, and there was a little record you could tear out of the magazine back then, the Guitar Player, and there was a song from him on there. And so that was my first seven inch thing. And so I went out and bought the albums I could find. I could only find Taproot at that time, but that was it. And then I, got Aerial Boundaries and all that stuff.
So you were seeing him with that crazy harp guitar. Is almost the visual that drew you in?
Yeah. At first it's like, what is this? You know, who is this guy? You know, I think I'd heard his name before, but just had no idea, you know, and then hearing it was just like, oh man, love this stuff.
What an under the radar cat. All these years later, still, you wonder if it was because he left so early that kept him kind of in the box and not a lot of people know it. So you drop that name to folks, often they just look at you with a blank stare. And you picked up this percussive, the other cat that you're really into, did he have any of that percussive thing?
Yeah, that's kind of a real trademark, I guess, of Preston Reed, is his name. He has a very percussive style. So that was, very influential to me too. Trying to hit the guitar on different places, to get different drum sounds. So.
And through your years of playing, has your style sort of grown to include, has it embodied more of his sound? Because I say it with, it's something I know that you're proud of and you should be. You know, you're kind of keeping the flame of Michael Hedges alive in so many ways. And you speak of him so fondly. You do him such justice by continuing to expose him. I mean, it's such a nice thing that you do because he was, he meant a lot to the people who got into his music in the 80s. He was a real, like you, I had come from like a hard rock, heavy metal thing. And I found this guy and was watching My Life Go By, a wonderful album filled with songs that he sings. And he didn't always do that. Mm-hmm. So that was an unusual record for him too, because it was quite a bit different from all of his other records. Really.
Yeah.
So has your style sort of continued to grow and you return to his music and maybe find little nuances and things that you hadn't discovered before?
Yeah, sometimes, I guess, like as you kind of mentioned there, I've been trying to make people aware of him, over the last couple of years. I've started to play one or two of his tunes in my set just because it seemed like there's so many young people particularly just have no idea. I'll go revisit his music there's always so many little nuances,
right.
And just such sophisticated compositions that he was coming up with. So yeah, there's always something to be inspired by in there.
And the live recordings are another, I guess, because there isn't that much studio stuff. They've become something to. There's quite a few of those, and he would, like you, break out different tricks live and in the moment, much like you do. Have these very special little, and it's an intimate thing. Maybe that's the word that makes Michael's playing and yours, maybe that's what so many people connected with you on YouTube for, was that intimacy. And you said, Andy had said he would play a tune of Michael's and you had gotten to meet some of his family members. Do they have the same sort of gratitude to you for what you do to keep Michael alive in so many ways musically?
Yeah, I guess it was last year I got to meet his younger brother and his sister and then his son as well. And it was all kind of through a mutual friend, after the show, meeting them and, we just all ended up in tears, to be honest. I mean, it was just hard to, it was something that I thought about, for years. Like I knew I could never meet Michael because he passed about a few months after I got into him. But I always thought maybe I could meet some of his family just to tell them how much his music meant to me, so to have it finally happen was very emotional just the way I guess that I'm trying to keep his memory alive, they really appreciated that. So
that's huge. Well, there aren't many cases like this in music, really. It's an unusual sort of thing. I'm trying to think of any that would be like it, and I don't know that I've ever, that I can think of one quickly in the conversation. If it pops up later, I'll just interject it. But yeah, what you're doing is very special, and for fans of his, it's a huge tribute because you're an original artist, you do your own thing, but you incorporate this music from a guy who left way too early, and I think people really miss. So it's great. It's like you can feel his approval almost as we sit and talk about it. Would you play us one of his jams that you you play us something that you whatever you think is I was just looking at my engineer, Jason. I was turning him on to it the other day. I was like, have you ever heard Michael Hedges? No. I was like, well, this is going to be a fun morning for the two of us then. What would you like to stick into the...
Maybe Aerial Boundaries from Michael Hedges. This is, like I was mentioning, as far as being a sophisticated piece of music, there's a section in this tune that I tried to learn many times and failed so many times. You have to stop strings from ringing out while you're playing other strings with your right hand. And it's one of the most sophisticated things I've ever had to try to learn, you know.
And that's a jam, by the way. You'd use some of him when I first got into public radio. They'd use it as music beds and stuff. I don't know if they still do. I don't know whether they
You know, actually, I was going through immigration and the airport, I think it was up in D.C. or somewhere, and Aerial Boundaries came on the video as they were showing images of like the Grand Canyon and blah, blah, blah. So it's still getting embedded in various places.
But. And when people hear you play it, they'll hear why, because as you pointed out, it's a song, and he made many songs, but this one is one that it embodies a lot of what Michael Hedges was all about.
Okay, I might just move that out of the way.
Yeah, no problem. This is one that needs a little needs some room to do this, and that's what gets back to what you were talking about, using it like a big drum. This is very cool. The music of Michael Hedges, performed by Andy McKee, right in our HPR Atherton Performing Arts Studio. Thank you. Andy McKee doing Aerial Boundaries from Michael Hedges right here in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio. I feel like I'm 16 again or something. And it's such un-80s music, huh? Considering that it was that's where this guy came out of, you know what I mean?
I guess so.
It's redemptive of an era that had a lot of schlock and bad times and bad stuff, you know, and then there's this. It was like he was coming from, like, you know, another planet entirely, like Neptune, you know.
For sure, yeah. Yeah, he was doing something quite different, for sure.
He really was. And you do it so well. Such a huge tribute to him, and just a beautiful thing. I can't tell you enough. I'm sure all the people who really love his music just would thank you again and again for keeping him alive. I mean, you don't get to talk to anybody. Talk to so many people on this show. Nobody would even, a lot of them don't even know who he is.
Yeah.
Let alone would do what you're doing for him.
Well, it's my pleasure, man. He really changed my life. So, you know, I think I owe it to him to spread his name, you know?
It's wonderful. And you've, cool thing about you, you've just came back from a tour of Asia. You've recorded with Asian Cats. You've had, we talked a little bit about, Andy's one of these guys who YouTube did a lot for him. It's become a powerful tool, YouTube.
It
really is. It's a useful tool. Some people say it's hurt the music industry in a lot of ways because, you know, if there's a new song and you love it, you know, it could be like, oh, there's the new Monster Magnet song and I want to hear it. And I'll just go to the YouTube. I'll play it again, again, and again. You hear 20, 30 times in a row. You could burn yourself out with the song in under a day and never need to hear it again. It's like we're living in a new era, right?
Yeah,
considering. So that's a neat thing about you. You've got a foot in the 80s, this whole other kind of era, but in a unique way. And then you have a real foot in today because you were sort of discovered through that. Mm-hmm. And did that lead to, what got you to be so big in Asia where you constantly recorded with different cats, you're touring over there? It seems like they really appreciate you.
Yeah, well, you know, it's kind of funny. That's the first part of the world that that I got to play in. And this is like pre-YouTube, in fact. In 2003, a promoter in Taiwan heard about me, and I had done well in some guitar competitions. And so that was kind of how he heard about me. And so he invited me to come to Taiwan and, you know, did gigs in Taipei and Tainan and Taichung and just around the island, you know, tiny little Taiwan. And then I would go back and I was teaching guitar lessons in a guitar store in Topeka, Kansas, where I'm from, you know. But that led to opportunities to go to Japan and then Belgium too. A Belgian guitarist heard me and he said, why don't you come, let's do some shows here. So we did that. And then later China itself and, right. and Japan. So, you know, all that stuff was still before the YouTube thing even happened. So I don't know, just, you know, early on they kind of heard about me. And so I got to go over there and play and they just seem to have an appreciation for this style that's almost unique to the world. I mean, there's a guy doing fingerstyle guitar in China in Japan named Kotaro Oshio, and he's like a MTV superstar. I mean, it's kind of crazy. So, you know, they kind of appreciate, I guess maybe the intricacy of it and the you know, all the focus that it requires to kind of play this type of music. I think they have appreciation for that.
That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Right, the intricacy, the concentration and stuff that goes into it, those are all the good ways I can see that it would connect. Mm-hmm. And Prince, one of the other things about you is all the covers. That's another thing that really connects you with Michael. And I don't know if it's just a coincidence, because I've seen the pictures of you with Prince, and Michael covered some Prince. Michael also covered other folks. People who, fans, would love to wonder, what's he going to pull out? What weird cover or something is he going to play? And a neat facet, a cool thing that you also do is cover different kinds of folks and do it in a really creative way. And not just Michael, but some of the people Michael actually liked to cover. And when I was checking out your website or one of your social media enterprises, and I saw you and Prince, and I realized that you had gotten to do a whole tour, right? And kind of explain, because that's another one of these bridges back to Michael and another similarity. Like, how did you get... how did he find out about you, and how did you end up getting to be so close and up personal with the Purple One?
Well, I got an email, I guess it was 4 years ago, from my manager just saying, hey, you gotta check this out. And so it was, from Prince's management saying that he wanted to collaborate, you know? And so I was, of course, I thought this was some sort of joke immediately. Like, you know, I called my manager and said, okay, what's going on? Who sent this actually? but it turned out it was real, you know? So I went up to Paisley Park and met him and the bass player and the drummer, and we jammed a bit and played some of my instrumental, you know, original music. And he said, this is great. You know, what are you doing this year? And I'm just like, oh, I'm not doing much in May. And so he's like, all right, well, we'll get together, figure something out, you know. And so I didn't know if he was, you know, wanting to write new tunes together or what. I had no idea. But the next thing I heard, he booked 9 concerts in Australia, and he wanted me to be the guitar player on it. So we got together one more time and worked on a medley of some tunes and had that all set to go. And before I got out there, though, I got another email, and it just said, this is your outfit in the subject line, you know. And it turned out he wanted me to wear like this 50-foot cape and you know, have images of like the universe projected on the back of it. And I don't know. I felt so uncomfortable about it. I couldn't do the cape thing. So I was like, man, can we do something else? And so there was...
That's a great story.
Yeah, I just, you know, I felt embarrassed, you know. I don't know. I usually just wear really simple type clothes, you know. And so having like some astral cape with the universe on the back, I just felt so weird. But so there was one of the dancers wore the cape, and I just played guitar. And so at the start of the concerts, you know, I sent him an MP3 of me doing Purple Rain, like an acoustic version, and he liked it. So I did that to start the concerts, and this lady wore the cape, and then we went down an elevator, and then explosions, and the band kicked off. And then I came back for the medley at the end of the night, and we did 7 or so songs together.
So you're part of his band.
It was more like a special guest thing, like special guitarist Andy, like in the program, you know, for the tour, it said special guest Mr. McKee.
But you were collaborating with him as part of his show. So it was like a special guest that was... Even though it was, you're saying that in the program, it looked more like an opening act sort of thing, but
or just not like I was in the band, like I was just a special guest for the tour or something like that.
But yet you were part of.
We played with the band though, for sure. Yeah,
that's just that's some heavy stuff.
It was. I mean, it was a huge honor, you know, and he really was a musical genius. You know, I don't know if most people realize just that. Gosh, he played all those instruments, you know, and he wrote all those tunes, and it was just inspiring to be around a guy like that.
The cape thing come from him or management?
It was him, yeah.
In
an email. He actually did a drawing, which I still have.
So he emails you directly?
No, it was from, he always would have an intermediary, you know, like his manager, just because, you know, I figured he doesn't want his email to get out there. So, but no, you could tell it was his, you know, writing, and he was always using like the number 2, you know, or the letter U in place of the word U. That was something he was doing before people texted, you know. He was the original guy to substitute
shorthand.
Shorthand.
Wow, what a great story.
Yeah, man, and I was just felt honored that he liked what I did, you know. And at the end of that run, though, I'd sent him one more email. It wasn't really my gig, you know. I think he was wanting to do more stuff, but I felt I like to write, you know, my own tunes, and I get such a joy out of that and being able to express myself with a guitar that way. So, you know, I said, you know, thanks for the opportunity, and I figured I'd never hear from him again. But he did email a couple more times about actually doing an album of acoustic arrangements of his tunes. And so, you know, I guess probably 3 years ago or so that an email like that came in, and I sent off an MP3 of me doing one of his tunes, and then just never heard anything. And then just in December, I got another email about doing the album thing. And then, you know, a few months later he was gone. So
the album never happened.
It never happened. Yeah. But, it was just, like I said, man, I just felt honored that he even, you know, knew who I was and liked what I did, because I really had a lot of respect for him.
Oh, it's huge for amazing. Him to want to collaborate with anybody. I'm sure anyone who wasn't already like a humongous star would be blown away. Like, what is going on?
Yeah.
You know, how could this, am I missing something?
Yeah, yeah.
What did I do to get the interest of, and just to clarify, so at the end of the Australian run, you were kind of saying.
Yeah, it felt unusual to me a bit. I you know.
You didn't want to keep doing it?
Not really, no.
And you're getting paid.
Yeah, sure. But, you know, I get paid to do my gigs, too. So,
yeah. Well, that takes a lot of guts. I mean, that says a lot. That's 2 things with Prince. One, to say, I really, you know, I don't know how you did it, and that's your business. You'd be like, I just can't see myself in this cape. It's just too much, too funny to be, you know, not talk about it with a straight face. It's just such an out there story. But then the second one, to be able to turn down more work with somebody like that. That's just, I mean, it, you know, not to, that's powerful.
Well, you know, you kind of mentioned it earlier too about the whole intimacy thing, like of this kind of music. That's kind of why I do it. You know, I feel like I'm really putting myself into this music, and that's why I do it. You know,
and was that big places and real not intimate, I guess is what.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like, yeah, arenas, you know, and we do it for like 3 nights in a row. Yeah. That kind of, you know, just
wow.
Huge.
So that's what you're saying, I guess, yeah. If I'm reading what it was that yeah. turned you
not,
off.
Not necessarily that was so big, but I mean, just that I felt like I can express myself with the guitar, yeah. You know?
Right.
And if it's in front of 20,000 people, you know, or 20 people, you know, if it's just me and the acoustic guitar, I really love doing that. Or if I were to collaborate with someone and create new music, you know, I would love that too. But
wow.
Kind of sitting in to be someone else's guitar player just didn't feel like my kind of thing. So.
Well, I have a lot of respect for that. And to be mm-hmm. able to, I don't know if I could have even had the guts to say, I just don't want to wear this cape.
Yeah, it could have all went away.
Fallen,
yeah,
right. Could have been like, been, oh, right, you don't want to wear the cape? Bye.
Exactly. Very easily done that. But shoot, you know, I just felt awkward about it.
I can imagine. No, that's gutsy. Two gutsy things with Prince. That's that gives leaves something to think about.
Well, you know, you've got to be honest with yourself, you know, if you're going to enjoy your life, you know, so I just try to be honest.
Are there videos? Are there lots of, could you get a bunch of material?
Unfortunately, not really. You know, he was very concerned about the use of his music and all that, you know, so he had people watching out on YouTube and
wow.
stuff. So there were a few videos for a while, but almost a week later they were gone.
And didn't get any reference out of it. You didn't get soundboard or anything of yourself.
No, but wow. he would actually record the videos too. And after the show, he would like to go backstage and point out things that could be different or who messed up this note, you know, things
little
like
James
that.
Brownish.
Totally James Brownish.
Not
yeah.
finding you during the performance, at least.
not me, fortunately, but.
Other cats. Wow.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
It does happen. Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Anyway, but yeah. So anyway, you know, he was videotaping those shows. Maybe they'll pop up someday, but, I have noticed that people been putting pictures up though that they took, and so that's been nice to see, because I just haven't had anything essentially from those concerts. So
that's a trip how that works sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the best, the only memory you get is one in your head.
Yeah,
and you got to just stick with it.
Yeah, there was a maybe if you got time for one more little tiny story. It was funny. You know, after the concerts too, he would like to have another concert, like a mini concert at like maybe a 300 seat type venue, a little club. Yeah. But there was one night we didn't have a gig, and so we didn't have an after show. He just wanted to have a little party at his hotel room. And so we all went over there, and he had a DJ playing music until about 2:30 a.m., and then he looked at me and said, "Mr. McKee, you got to calm these ladies down." And he wanted me to play acoustic guitar.
Just you?
Just me doing some acoustic guitar, you know. And I played a few of my songs, and one of them is a tune of mine called Rye Lynn, and he said, yeah, that's the one that he saw on YouTube, you know, that made him want to get a hold of me in the first place. So, you know, just those little memories.
I bet.
You know, just always.
That's a heavy
stick.
One.
Yeah, you know, and I'll never forget it. I mean, it was just a huge, like I said already, you know, just such an honor to have someone like that even recognize my music, you know.
Those are things that ponder for the rest of your life.
Yep.
I mean, and the whole, all of it is insane. Well, I was going to say we could play the Prince, but do you want to play the Rye Lynn one instead? I like to give a little more exposure to your stuff since we had kind of negotiated another cover to come up later. So yeah, let's hear that and I'll give you a moment to retune. Andy retunes everything for each of these specific songs. Andy McKee in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio telling stories that you just... really unusual stories.
Yeah.
What would Michael think about all that, huh? That, I can't see Michael wearing a 50-foot cape either.
Yeah, geez. Yeah.
That's good stuff. That's so great. You tell that story a lot?
I do, actually. Yeah, I have been for a while, you know, talking about that cape story. It's just too outrageous. But
it's Andy McKee, Atherton Performing Arts Studio. Thank you. Andy McKee, Atherton Performing Arts Studio, and important song in your career, and one that you jammed in the that was in the hotel room with Cool the Girls Down.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah,
gotta cool these ladies off. Good for you, man. That's tasty, and that was one of the ones that broke you on the YouTube too.
Yeah, right? That was so another big one on there. Yeah,
just really encapsulates the whole ball game. Kind of like the guy whose legacy you keep alive so well, Michael Hedges. You cover a lot of different tunes. There was one that I read. I never heard you cover this. I was just reading up for the thing. And it was one of those jams back then. I didn't really like that kind of stuff. It was like new wave. I didn't even get it, right? But years later, the shelf life of that tune, talking about Tears for Fears, this tune, it grew well over time. It aged very, very well. It's kind of like turned a corner. And I understand that you play it. You said you'd be willing to do it maybe as like a finale to our little set here. Would you mind laying Everybody Wants to Rule the World into the into the set list of your experience here? And just can't thank you enough as a Michael Hedges fan for what you do. When I had you on the phone, it was really fun to talk to you, but this is so much better. Just to really tell you again, I appreciate it. I'm sure a lot of other people appreciate it. It's a great mission to pay tribute to anybody who's done something special. You know, it could be, you know, our parent or something. Could be someone else who's, could be Martin Luther King. I mean, there's so many people who we find inspiration in life. As a guitar player who got so little exposure, so little recognition, so few people know who he is. And you have such an original style, yet you pay tribute to him. So just really know that a lot of people who are hardcore Michael Hedges fans are grateful to you. It's great that you met his family too. Must have been a powerful thing as you described that encounter with them. I can only imagine, because they don't meet people just like I don't get to meet people like that. Neither do they. I mean, there aren't a lot of guitar players out there who are doing that.
That's true, man. Yeah,
this cat. And he, as we mentioned earlier, was a fan of covering esoteric material in his show. So did that inspire you to do that, or did you just do it yourself naturally?
Well, I just kind of did it naturally, I guess. I mean, I don't really sing yet. Maybe one day I will, but I always liked, you know, 80s tunes a bit. You know, I was born in 1979, but some of the first music I heard was, you know, MTV stuff. Sure. In the 80s, you know, and all that. So, you know, I just thought it'd be fun to try to do some of those on the acoustic guitar. And so I came up with an arrangement of the tune Africa from the band Toto. And then some other things. I did another Toto one, and then this too. This is, Tears for Fears. Everybody Wants to Rule the World, you know, and it's just fun to try to capture those melodies on here and all the harmony and try to convey the tune in a new way. You
know? In an intimate way, too, mm-hmm. which is really your the reason that you kind of like struck out and said, no, Prince, I gotta get back to my intimacy. and this is a great venue to capture some of that in. So you're a logical one to play in this room. Really appreciate it. Thank you for coming today, and love to hear you. Hear your version of that.
All right, man. Atherton. Thanks, man.
It's been a very special day here in our Atherton Performing Arts Studio, HPR, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio, all things considered, at the Blue Note Hawaii through Sunday, and Andy McKee, really, really grateful that you would be willing to come over here and do this for us, and I hope you've enjoyed being here as much as I've enjoyed having you. Thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure to play for you today, man. Thanks.